Mutual Broadcasting System, in cooperation with the War Department, presents Your Army Service Forces. Hello, everyone. This is PFC Carl Rukoff with the 31st in our series of War Department broadcasts to the women of America about the work of the Army's lifeline to victory, your Army Service Forces. Today, we're going to depart a little from the usual in the USO Army Special Services portion of our program to bring to the microphone one of the many unsung heroines of show business, one of the talented youngsters who, with only a toehold on the ladder of success, was willing to gamble a career, if necessary, in order to ship overseas to entertain troops far from home. Her name is Edith Brown, and we'll hear from her later. But before we get to Edith, we've got a story of even greater importance, we believe. It's the story of Uncle Sam's nieces in khaki, some of whom you'll hear from directly as they debark from a ship in an African port from Italy, where the fighting is still going on. Men in the Army, from generals on down, are proud of the job the Women's Army Corps, ASF, is doing in the battle for liberation. From England, Egypt, New Caledonia, Australia, Africa, Italy, and Hawaii, wherever they're stationed, the cry goes out, "Give us more wax like the ones we've got now. They're wonderful." But now, here's our ASF band with their opening number, the marching tune from the Danny Kaye picture Up in Arms. All out for freedom. Wonder what Private First Class Mary Smith thinks about as she stands at the rail of a troop transport looking out to strange land thousands of miles from home. Well, let's find out from a group of wacks whose voices were caught by the wire recorder as they were about to march down the gangplank of a troop transport lying in a harbor in Africa.
Hello, America. We're aboard a transport ship that has just berthed in a North African port. Among the troops, fresh from America but a little weary from their travels, are over 100 enlisted women of the Women's Army Corps and over a score of officers. Many of these officers will work on operational jobs, taking over the work of male officers of the Army of the United States. The troops of allied nations are starting to file off the gangplank, hunched over the weight of the equipment they are carrying. The gangplank is very narrow. They're going off slowly, one at a time, apparently very quietly. The wax will be among the last of the troops to set their feet on North Africa. We are up on the second deck, with our portable wire recorder, where the women are, watching the city, watching the soldiers disembark, waiting for their own disembarkation. We're going to interview a few of these girls who have just arrived from Italy. They made the trip over from the United States and spent 2-3 days in Italy before they set sail for North Africa. Here's a whack who seems to be very interested in what's going on. What's your name? Faye Carlton. And where's your home?
Tampa, Florida.
How'd you enjoy the trip over?
It was wonderful and most unusual.
Well, what was unusual about it?
Well, I've never seen quite so much water before.
Not even in Tampa?
No, not even in Tampa.
Were you able to get a good view of the city as you steamed into the harbor?
Yes, I was sitting right up on the bow in the very end, and I had the best view. In fact, I was the first white to reach the harbor, I think.
Something like that, sir. A woman they always have in front of the ships, you know. Well, how do you think you're going to like it over here?
Oh, I'm sure I'll like it very much. It looks fascinating.
Thank you very much, Private Carlton. Here's a corporal over here. Will you come over to the microphone, please, corporal? What's your name?
Kathy Shepperton.
And where do you live?
Barrington, Rhode Island.
Have you ever been to Africa before?
No, I haven't.
Feel pretty excited, do you?
A little.
Have you any idea of what kind of work you're going to do here?
I'm going to drive a truck.
Ah, that's fine. Here's a whack over here who looks pretty young. How old are you?
20.
Well, that must be the youngest in your group, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
By the way, what's your name and where do you come from?
Doris Kerr, and I come from Washington, D.C.
And a buck cry that I see. Yes. Are you going to be in signal call work, do you think?
Yes, I think so.
What makes you think that?
Well, I was a telephone operator in civilian life, and that's what I think I'll be over here.
Well, that's fine. Now, let's see what one of the officers has to say for herself. Will you step over here a moment, Lieutenant?
Yes.
Thank you. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Lieutenant Julius Felton from Madison, Wisconsin.
Are you an operational or a company officer?
Operational.
Do you have any advance information about your probable assignment?
Well, I hope I'm going to be working at the message center in Allied Force headquarters.
What have you done in civilian life? Anything that would tie in with this signal call work?
Well, I became interested in physics when I was at the University of Wisconsin and ended up by taking a course in radio.
Well, that ought to tie in very nicely. I hope you're going to enjoy your work here.
Oh, I think I shall very much. Would you mind interviewing the girl over there, Private First Class Elizabeth Murphy of Ojai, California? I have a special reason for asking.
Certainly, Lieutenant. Bring her over here.
Hello, Private Murphy. Welcome to North Africa.
Thank you.
Have you heard the great news about the taking of Rome and the invasion of northern France?
Yes, ma'am. We heard that when we were in Italy in the staging area.
What was the reaction among the soldiers in the West?
Well, among the soldiers, they've been looking forward to that for so long, many of them were just as jubilant as though the armistice had been signed. At least that's what it said.
Did any of them make the comment that they thought they were getting over here too late to take part in the war?
Yes, ma'am. Some of them felt that they should have been in there on that push. It was their dish, especially the taking of Rome.
Well, thank you very much, Private Murphy. Say, Lieutenant Felton, how about explaining your reason for wanting Private Murphy to go on the air?
Well, she doesn't know it, but her husband, Captain Gerald Murphy, is waiting at the gangplank for her. At least I have every reason to think so.
Well, that certainly is great news. Well, I think that perhaps the wets are going to get ready to come off the ship. There they go. He perhaps just heard the order given by their company commander, First Lieutenant Vivian B. Watson of Waynetown, Indiana. We'll say goodbye now. This program has come to you via the Army's portable wire recorder from a troop ship which has just docked in a North African port.
And now a salute to the Women's Army Corps, the WAC hymn. Fiatsi Leon Gray will supply the vocals.
March beside our men of battle to any shore where the flag must fly. We march beside our men of battle. Our strength is firm and our courage high. We share the world of peace tomorrow. We share the fortunes of war. As we march beside our men of battle, the Women's Army Corps.
Just the kind of talk you hear when men are gathered together on that weary, forced march through the mud of Italy, or in the slit trench in Normandy, the air punctuated with the scream of mortar shells and the sharp tattoo of a machine gun, or after the mail they waited for is distributed, battle-tired and grimy, deep in the green hell of the Pacific. just the talk of men. Some mere boys, but soldiers all.
She has a kind of wisdom about her, Sis has. An honest-to-God thing, and well, laugh if you want, but I always figured her a little Will Rogers. She had a knack of putting just the right slant on things. Well, you know, whenever there'd be a lot of sounding off about people, you know how some folks are. Why, Sis would speak right out in protest. Just a few little words, and bingo, the whole complexion changed. And when she'd finished her little say, you got the idea that whoever they were sounding off about was a some sort of a hero. Somebody down and being kicked around. And, well, nobody'd be sore at the little monkey. Not even Mom, because, well, they just never thought of things the way Sis did. More than once, she took my part, too. And when I was flattened and wanted to ask the old man again, she was always good for a touch. She never tattled either when she was a kid, even though I'd usually be the cause of it. I left her bawling her eyes out. The whole town had Sis pegged right. If she was in on something, it was bound to be okay. Don't mind me sounding off about Sis, but she was no cutie, the giddy kind, I mean. Just regular. And smart as a whip. I remember that party of hers, oh, about 2 years ago. Just a young gal's affair. Somebody started sounding off about women going into service. You know how we fellas felt about them. And I can remember Sis standing up with that old fire in her eye and saying,
I beg your pardon, but am I in Centerville, USA? I don't think I understand this all very well. If they didn't need us girls, they wouldn't have us, would they? I think a girl who joins up is doing a fine thing. This little cookie will, when I'm old enough. Wouldn't you join if you thought it would bring our men folks back that much quicker? Your brother's over there, Bess, and so is James. Mine's going soon, too. And besides, putting on a uniform doesn't change anybody. It's all in what goes on inside of you, in the way you feel. The girl who puts on the uniform of her country, a girl who does, is wearing her heart on the right side. That's what I think.
And that was Sis, and there it was. And somehow it was all there, too. She kind of bawled a little and mad-like stalked out. Yep, kid sister's all there. She was only about 18 the last time I saw her, but now I feel pretty darn good about it. It's here in the letter. You know, it's not such a bad war now with Sis in it somewhere with me. Oh, maybe she's pounding a typewriter somewhere, or working with the medics, or driving a jeep, or sitting at a switchboard. Or maybe even flagging in a plane at a signal tower. Or packing grenades and even those supplies piled up out there. Or maybe checking off some big gun on an assembly line. But whatever it is, fellas, you can bet it'll be done.
And now a little music by our all-soldier band from Fort Slocum and Camp Shanks. It's Point Siena. Thank you. We feel very proud in presenting our first guest today. She's Edith Brown, the young lady who has spent the past 20 months traveling for Army Special Services and USO camp shows. In the last 8 months, she has entertained our soldiers in South America, Africa, Arabia, Persia, Egypt, Iran, Iraq.
And a couple of spots that even Cook's tours never heard of.
Hello, Edith. To establish a new high and understatement, I suppose you had some adventures while overseas.
Oh, only a few little things, like flying with 15 people in a 5-passenger plane 100 feet over the desert in a sandstorm.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm.
Or being on a blazing railroad car attached to a train loaded with high-octane gas.
Oh, high home. Just nothing ever happens, eh?
Well, when you're playing with the camp show circuit overseas, those are common everyday occurrences, Carl. But I did have some interesting things happen.
Don't tell me that you fought in any battles, too.
No. A couple of soldiers were showing us through the Medina, the native quarter in Marrakesh, French Morocco.
Uh-huh.
We were on the streets of fakers, you know, those cute little boys that lie on the bed of nails and eat fire and stuff. We saw a weird-looking little character with a tremendous shock of hair playing a flute, dancing about in front of a cobra that was weaving his head in rhythm.
Great.
No sooner did we see him than he saw us. He rushed over to me and said, "Chicago, fine city."
That Chicago Chamber of Commerce sure gets around.
Well, being a Chicago girl, that really knocked me over.
What did you say?
I opened my mouth to say something when the native whipped out a handful of press clippings. His reviews from the Chicago World's Fair.
Isn't it a small world?
It sure is.
Well, having thereby disposed of the clichés, let's get on with the trip.
Well, we flew about 60,000 miles and felt as though we had done another 60,000 by jeep, truck, train, and what have you. And we also established the three-a-day circuit.
Well, it kind of sounds like the return of vaudeville.
Oh, it practically was. Most of the men in the Middle East are more concerned with the transportation of supplies than actual hand-to-hand combat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they're spread out in little motor pools, way stations, emergency airfields, and all sorts of small camps. Well, we wanted to cover all of them if we possibly could. And we decided that playing one camp in the morning, one in the afternoon, and another after supper would be the best routine.
Yes, that's quite a schedule. How many people were in this unit?
5. 4 girls and 1 man.
Poor guy must have been terribly lonesome.
Well, I think that he could have traded jobs with any man that we met. Most of the men hadn't seen a white woman for close to 2 years. And whether we were in tropical clothing or bundled up in G.I. underwear, mackinaws, and heavy boots, we looked mighty terrific to them.
That I can understand. Well, what were you doing in the heavy clothing? I mean, I thought that part of the world was pretty warm.
Well, the mountains of Iran are full of snow and ice all year round. And if you've never skidded through those narrow, winding roads in a jeep, you've missed half the fun of life.
My geography books, as I recall them, used to have pictures with sunshine and camels and stuff.
Oh, we hit some hot towns, too. One little place called Dizful in Iran has a nice 180-degree temperature, 4 or 5 months a year.
Right.
The natives live in caves under the ground during their summer season.
That's for the natives. What sort of living quarters do they have for the soldiers over there?
Well, I was really amazed. All the camps, whether large or small, have permanent stone barracks and all of the conveniences they could possibly have. One thing that impressed me tremendously was that every camp, no matter how small, had a post exchange.
It certainly sounds as though the Army is taking good care of its men overseas.
Well, our men get the best of everything. There are Red Cross or service clubs in every large camp, and special service officers are always planning off-duty activities.
That's swell. Something I've often wondered, Edith, is what men do if they could get a furlough over there.
Oh, Special Service Division has that well taken care of, too. They have 2 furlough cities, Cairo and Alexandria, both of which have complete layouts for any type of sport and lots of loafing room for anyone who just wants to take it easy.
I see. Has your unit any future plans?
Oh, yes, indeed. We're going overseas again shortly. And while we stay here waiting for the go-ahead signal, we are playing camps and hospitals in this territory.
And needless to say, doing a terrific job. Well, thank you very much, Edith, for being with us today. And lots of luck on your next trip for the Special Services Division and USO Camp Show.
Well, we're looking forward to the trip. See you when we get back. So long.
Goodbye, Edith Brown. Our next guest has established quite a record for entertaining at camps in this country. He played his 345th camp show last week. That well-known favorite of stage, screen, and radio, Ukulele-ike, Cliff Edwards.
Well, hello, Carr. Seeing all these soldiers in your band makes me feel that I'm just playing another camp.
Well, Cliff, I guess you're kind of used to that feeling by now, aren't you?
Well, I may be used to it, but I still get a terrific thrill out of playing and singing for the boys. They make you feel so happy. They're so enthusiastic and full of pep.
Even after a 20-mile hike?
Well, they can take that and lots more. What's more important, they can dish it out, as you've been proving right along.
I guess you're right there, Cliff.
Say, what's that you're holding behind your back?
Oh, that's my little old ukulele. Mm-hmm. I can't bear seeing all those boys sitting there and not wanting to do something.
You couldn't have picked a better place for it. May I request a song, Cliff?
Well, you're a soldier, aren't you?
Doesn't the stripe on my arm mean anything?
All right, Private First Class, fire away.
All right, Cliff, the song you did so wonderfully in Pinocchio.
You mean, When You Wish Upon a Star?
Right.
When the stars are born, they possess a gift or two, and one of them is this. They have the power to make a wish come true. When you wish upon a star, it makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. And if your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wish upon a star, just like the other dreamers do, fate is kind. She brings to those who love the sweet fulfillment of their secret longing. And like a book out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. When you wish upon a star, your dreams come true. Yes, like a book out of the blue, suddenly it comes in view. When you wish upon a star, your dreams will all come true.
It would take a lot more than a 20-mile hike to dampen my enthusiasm for that, Cliff Edwards.
Oh, keep saying those things. They sure sound pretty.
Cliff, I hear you have your own radio program now, don't you?
Yeah, I'm on 5 times a week, Monday through Friday.
Well, doesn't that keep you a little busy?
Well, but I still have weekends, and there are lots of camps and hospitals that I want to add to my list. You know, I was out in California for so long, I kind of skipped this part of the country.
I wouldn't call 345 camps a skimpy job, Cliff.
Well, as long as there's boys in them, I'm going to keep playing.
Oh, well, that's swell. Could we persuade you to do one more number for me?
You did notice, though, that I'm still holding that little elongated lamb chop.
I did, huh? I did.
Well, here it is. See, there's a little rhythm. The pity pats through my brain. So darn persistent the day isn't distant when it will drive me insane. Comes in the morning without any warning, hangs around me all day. I'll have to sneak into it, someday I'll speak it. I hope it listens when I say, fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, I'm all quiver. What a mess you make it, the neighbors want to know why I'm all shaking just like a flipper. Each morning I get up with the sun, start a hopping, never stop to find the night, no words have been done. But I know that once doesn't matter, but now you're doing wrong. When you start to patter, I'm so unhappy. Won't you take a day off, decide to run along some far away off and make it snappy. Oh, how I long to be the man I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, you gotta stop picking on me. And it's just a jiggy ball, and it's just a jiggy ball. It's just a oh, how I long to be the man I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, you gotta stop picking on me.
Ah, that was swell, Cliff Edwards. And thanks to you and Edith Brown for coming in and telling us and showing us what kind of entertainment Army Special Services and USO camp shows are providing for our men.
Well, thank you very much for asking me, Carl. So long.
So long, Cliff.
every finger that squeezes a trigger, there are thousands pulling, pushing, and carrying. Soldiers of ASF, pushing and pulling heavy field pieces through the jungle growths of the Marianas and Burma, carrying boxes of food, ammunition, and medical supplies across the shell-pocked beaches and into the flame of Normandy. All this to keep the vital supply line to our combat troops unbroken. And from the theaters of operation, that supply line, maintained by your Army service forces, stretches back across two oceans to the United States, to the huge supply depots, to the ordnance plants, to the mills, the factories, the government arsenals producing the shells, tanks, guns, the jeeps, the trucks, the bulldozers, the life-giving medical supplies. It's the mission of your Army service forces to keep that supply line moving to your son, husband, or brother in combat in ever-increasing amounts until victory on all fronts is assured and your men can come home. But the success of ASF's mission depends upon the cooperation of every war worker in this country. Any lessening of effort on the part of any war worker, any switching over in order to get in on the ground floor of peacetime production, may lengthen the time before that man of yours comes home, may lessen his chances of coming home alive. Next week, your Army Service Forces brings you the inside story of the picture coverage by the combat photographers of the Signal Corps ASF of the invasion of Normandy, with Colonel Curtis Mitchell to tell the story. And through the cooperation of USO Army Special Services, we'll have as our guest that well-known raconteur of stage, screen, and radio, Mr. George Jessel. Your Army Service Forces was written by Mary Louise Anglin and Sergeant Victor Sack, and is directed by Sylvia Lowy. Our ASF band, made up of soldiers of the Transportation Corps from Fort Slocum and Camp Shanks, is under the direction of Major Harry Salter. Your narrators today were Mitzi Gould and Bill Woodson. And this is PFC Carl Rukoff speaking for your Army Service Forces and inviting you to be with us again next week, same time, same station. Your Army Service Forces is a regular weekly presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System in cooperation with the War Department, Army Service Forces. This is Mutual.